Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. I'm here to announce that former Minneapolis Police Officer Derek Chauvin is in custody. Former Minneapolis Police Officer Derek Chauvin has been charged by the Hennepin County Attorney's Office with murder and with manslaughter. He has been charged with third-degree murder. We are in the process of continuing to review the evidence. There may be subsequent charges later.
You are listening to the voice of Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman today, announcing the charges against 44-year-old former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Chauvin is the first white officer in Minnesota to be criminally prosecuted in the death of a black civilian. Just let that sink in a little bit. Chauvin is the first white officer in Minnesota to be criminally prosecuted in the death of a black civilian. My heart is so heavy today, friends. I know you feel it too. This deep sadness, the grief over the brutal murder and the loss of George Floyd, and the sadness for his family and the community that grieves for him. He should not be dead, and we should not let his memory be in vain, or this memory, his life. He, his name, his life, and I'm sorry it hasn't happened before, but should be an agent for change. I hope this is the last time we will be doing stories like this. I pray for that. I hope this is the tipping point where we can learn and grow and change. My heart is also so heavy for our city, for the city of Minneapolis, as it burned last night. St. Paul burned last night. And that was devastating. It was also devastating for the peaceful protesters that were there trying to get their voices heard. I don't want this looting and this rioting to be louder than the protesters, because they have a right to be angry and they have a right to be heard. It's time we all sat up and listened to them. My family awoke this morning to a text from a friend of my oldest daughter's. Her friend Sharon was at the protest last night, peacefully protesting with her family, and she was shot in the face with a rubber bullet. Sharon sent my daughter a picture of her in the hospital. Her mouth is bloodied, her entire chin area is swollen, and she was awaiting the plastic surgery to fix the damage from the rubber bullet. I am devastated for Sharon and her family and all of the people there that just wanted to be heard. We are in a heavy time, friends, and it is time to start affecting real change. Here's the deal. I don't have the answers. I don't have the answers. I want this show. I don't want this show to be the blame game. I don't want us looking back. What I want us to do is have those real hard conversations. We heard in Susie's stories that friend of George Floyd saying this isn't what he would have wanted. Well, what would he have wanted, and how can we do that? How can we move forward? We also heard in the news that it's time for white people to start having hard conversations. Let's have them. Let's hear it. Let's have them in a respectful manner where everybody can ask questions and everybody can learn. That's what I want this show to be. That is my goal for this show. From it has been But really, with these conversations, I don't want to back away from hard conversations or hard questions. I want you to ask them. I want me to ask them. And I want to find us some answers. That will be our goal together, to learn and grow together. Last night, the looting devastated all of us. I got a letter today from a friend of mine who received this note from his friend who was standing watch outside her father's condo. The letter starts this way. I spent all last night defending my father's condo from vandals, looters, and arsonists. So I speak as someone who literally has been standing on the street. There are absolutely peaceful protesters and people protesting what happened reasonably and legitimately. And there is also a small core of anarchists. That letter was written by Carol Becker. Defending her father's condo last night on Lake Street, she is joining us now on the phone to set the scene, to give us a feel for what it was like on the streets of Minneapolis yesterday. Carol, I am so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us, where were you and what was it like last night?
So, you know, there's Lake and there's Hiawatha. Hiawatha runs north-south. Lake runs east and west. The third precinct is sort of in the south east corner. In the northwest corner was High Lake Shopping Center and then my dad's condo quarter flats. And so we were about two blocks from the police precinct. And Wednesday night, I have to get my dates straight. Wednesday night when they started burning near my dad's condo, we went over basically to try and protect it. There's an Aldi's in the lower level and then 36 units above. We have kids in the building. We have old people in the building. And so about 10 of us stayed out all night from about 9 p.m. to about 7 a.m. Literally, people wanted to come and loot it and burn it. And we literally confronted people and told them not to do that. And that they should go somewhere else, that this was people's homes, even though there was a business in it, and it was not okay to loot it, and it was not okay to burn it. And we stood out there
and
all
night.
And
you held them off?
We did.
And you held them off? Yes.
We held them off the first night. We ended up getting help with two armed guards the second night. The second night, we had a gun pulled on us, a bat thrown at us, people who verbally threatened to shoot us, verbally threatened to beat us up. People who tried to run around us. We ended up wetting the building down so it wouldn't catch fire. There were two groups setting fire to things. Some anarchists, two guys, and one tall, one short, and a black hoodie, black pants. And literally carrying around accelerant. And then they eventually lit the shopping mall on fire. And just going from business to business to business, I think one thing that's important that people need to know is the fires were set by a small group of people. And I call them anarchists because they would draw the anarchist A, the A with a circle through when they did it. And if you start looking at the pictures, especially the places that have burned, you will see that. But two guys, and they got picked up in a car and went off and I believe went and burned some other things too after watching them light the mall on fire. And businesses don't burn very easily, especially things like garages and auto parts are just concrete and a roof. And so you have to be pretty skilled in being able to light those kind of fires. We also had them, they turned the power off. They basically lit some cars on fire that were underneath the transformer and got the transformer on fire.
And Carol, what I thought, I just want to jump in here because what I thought was so poignant about your letter is that you mentioned this. You said this is a small group of people that don't care about the protest. The protesters are there because they care about George Floyd. They care about this community. These are people that could be from the outside. And I want to make that differentiation that these are people only there to loot and are opportunistic. They are not part of our community.
Exactly. Well, and then there were, you know, the looters, there were organized looting groups. There'd be people with pickups and there'd be two guys that would run in and there were, you know, a guy in the pickup and then they would bring all the stuff out, fill the pickup up and off it would go. And then when he was gone, they'd come and load some more things over to the curb and then he'd come back. So it wasn't just, I mean, there were like the liquor stores got hit really hard, where people would run in and grab, you know, like four bottles of vodka. There was a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But there were also organized groups. And, you know, and some of them, wanted, you know, a couple of them told me, you know, we know the cops aren't going to do anything. We can literally do anything we want. And then, of course, they physically threatened us because they said, you know, I could come and beat you up with a baseball bat and nobody's going to come. And I don't think those were our community and our people either.
No.
And then there were just people who were opportunistic, you know, and Target may still be being looted. I haven't been over there recently, but when I left at 6:30 this morning, it was still being looted. It's been looted for 2 days.
Hey, Carol, will tonight be any different?
So the National Guard is supposed to be over at 21st and Lake, which is on the other side of Target. I don't know. I don't know that it's any different. But maybe they're going to go somewhere else and loot. And it was just all looting of opportunity. You'd know, people would run in and, like, there was the 7 Mile Beauty Store. This woman, she's Asian. She's an Asian immigrant. Her small business. And they went in the first day and trashed the place. So yesterday morning, I sat there with her as she cried about losing her business. And, you know, her family was there, and so they boarded everything up. And then they took out a few things, but they didn't have a truck to get everything out. So they took some things out, and they boarded it up, and then they left. Well, last night it burnt. So it's now gone.
Carol, I'm so sorry that we're out of time, but I just wanted you to give that perspective that, you know, you notice that these are anarchists. These are organized people. They're not feeling our community. They're not there to protest and there to make change. They're just there for opportunity. So I think it's really important that there's a differentiation between the protesters, like my daughter's friend there who was being peaceful, and then these anarchists. Carol, I'm sorry we're out of time, but listen, I wish you the best tonight. I hope you are safe. I hope there is no looting. I pray for peace. When we get back, we will talk about some of those hard conversations that white people and people of color need to start having. That's next. Some breaking news to share with you. Minneapolis will be under a curfew tonight and tomorrow night, 8 p.m. The curfew will lift each morning at 6 a.m. Jordana Green here. Thank you for spending time with me. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for trying to learn and get through this with me. Yesterday, our show started with an unfortunately contentious conversation with Nikema Levy Armstrong. I had, you know, my intention was not to offend her, yet I asked her a question that offended her. And I called her twice today and texted her because I wanted to learn more about that. And I hope to learn more about that. And then Van Jones came on CNN this morning, and he sort of addressed this issue of what to say, what not to say, and this underlying systemic racism. I want to share his thoughts with you because they are so good. And then we are going to open the phone lines to his comments at 4:30. So let's listen to perceptions about police in this country.
You thought maybe the world worked one way because police are nice to you, because these things don't happen to people that you know. But the whole time, there was a whole other America. And the reason that you see people now doing the things that they're doing now, we have no idea who set those fires. It could have been provocateurs. It could be anybody. But the reason you see people willing to risk their lives in the middle of a plague and a pandemic and to go out and literally risk their lives to protest is because people are now fed up. People are telling you they're tired of hashtags. They're tired of Van Jones saying we can have a bipartisan solution. They're tired of people like me. They're tired of people saying over and over again that you know, we're just basically one bill away or one election away from some progress. It's not the racist white person who's in the Ku Klux Klan that we have to worry about.
So who is it? And he answers that question, and the answer is chilling.
It's the white liberal Hillary Clinton supporter walking her dog in Central Park who would tell you right now, people like that, oh, I don't see race. Race is no big deal to me. I see us all as the same. I give to charities. But the minute she sees a black man who she does not respect or who she has a slight thought against, she weaponized race like she had been trained by the Aryan Nation. A Klans member could not have been better trained to pick up the police and pick up her phone and tell the police it's a black man, African-American man, come get him.
And now it's time to get really honest. You're listening to Van Jones on CNN this morning talking about systemic racism, and he got really honest that we all have it, we all do it. Here's what he had to say.
So even the most liberal, well-intentioned white person has a virus in his or her brain that can be activated at an instant. And so what you're seeing now is a curtain falling away. And those of us who have been burdened by this every minute, every second of our entire lives are fragile right now. We are fragile right now. We are tired. And so I appreciate people who've been reaching out. I've had people reaching out to me for 2 days now, expressing their empathy and their sympathy. My only prayer, look in the mirror at how you choke off black opportunity, how you choke off black dignity, how you behave in ways that make it harder for African Americans to rise in your profession, in your place of work, on your campus, in your house of worship, and start working on that. Because this is the last domino of a whole series of dominoes that have been falling for a long time. And black people have been getting gaslit every time we point this out. And people tell us, well, maybe it was this, and maybe it was that. Are you sure it was this? Are you sure it was that? You don't get to this outcome. You don't get to the point where police officers can stand around. Don't tell me about the one who had his knee in his neck. Sometimes you have psychopaths and sociopaths with power. But you know, when that happens, you call the police. The police were there watching it and defending it. And now there's still no charges. That is the problem, that we have allowed this contempt for black life to build and to build. And James Baldwin said it best. White people in these situations are always innocents, are always innocent. Oh my God, I can't believe this. Teach me, educate me, help me understand. Like, how did this happen? Talk to me, tell me something, tell me what to do. White people are always innocent, and their innocence constitutes their crime. It is too late to be innocent. It is too late. We've had too many funerals. We've had too many funerals for white people to be still this innocent and this shocked. I'm not saying that witnessing a lynching shouldn't flatten you. It has flattened all of us, but it has been flattening us for years and years and decades and centuries. And so now we're all in it together. There is not an easy legal answer. There's not an easy political answer. There is a personal and spiritual accounting that all of us are now called to. How can civil rights people like me get on TV every day and promise a better outcome and fail every day and still have a job? What the heck is wrong with people like me? What the heck is wrong with all of us? We got to this place.
It cut me to my core. It laid me bare. I want to do what he says. I do. I hope you do too. Reactions to Van Jones comments. Van Jones, 651-989-9226. Next. It's 3:36. Jordana Green here. It's time for Hard Conversations. It is. I do hope you are outside enjoying some of this incredible weather that we're having in Minnesota, but it is a dark day. The sky is betraying us with its sunshine and flowers blooming because it is a hard day in Minnesota for all Minnesotans. It's hard for communities that feel unheard. It's hard for the family of George Floyd. It's hard for all of us who empathize with that and still don't fully understand what the heck is going on. It's hard for the city of Minneapolis to watch businesses and homes burn to the ground. It's hard for the people that are afraid that they are going to have their home or business burn to the ground. It is a hard day. It really is. But only through some learning and some growth and being open-minded and not shutting each other down and not judging can we get there. I just played some comments from you from Van Jones. Van Jones is a CNN contributor, speaker. He's really incredible. I watch his show. And he has such an interesting take and just laid it bare for all of us here on WCCO radio, that we all have implicit bias, whether you would like to admit it or not. And it is time to take a good, hard look in the mirror and say, where can I do better? Where can I do better? And I think that is such useful advice. And, you know, you look back on times in your life where you were walking down the street and you crossed the street because you saw, oh, I don't know, a group of people that were maybe a different color than you. Or you judge a group because they are a minority. Maybe that's different from you. Or you do subtle behaviors. That is, you know, systemic, inbred racism that we are, I hate to say we're born with it because I like to think we're born innocent, but it is certainly part of our lives. It is learned behavior. It is taught behavior. And how do you get through it? And I'm not saying that anybody is ever not going to have it, but it's about fighting against our worst instincts, fighting against that negativity that is going to heal this divide. My phone number is 651-989-9226. Are you working on this in your life, and are you willing to? You know, I had a tough call with Nakima Levy Armstrong yesterday, and she was offended by something I said. And you guys know me because I never mean to offend with anything I ever say here on this show. And I was confused why she was offended. And then I listened to Van and I thought, okay, maybe this is why. I didn't understand that the question was offensive. And I called her in the hopes of talking this through with her. You know, and I learned. I learned from that experience that there are some things that can be offensive to people that I didn't consider. It's because I come at it with a different lens. And that's the stuff I want to learn more of. What am I doing that is offensive to people? Because it doesn't matter if I think it's offensive. If it's offensive to them, it is. It is. So then I need to change that behavior. I need to learn from that. I need to grow from that. You can't expect other people to change to make things better. It's about the change that we have to create within ourselves. Are we willing to notice it? Are we willing to do it? I think Van's comments were sent to me from God because, you know, I'd had this experience yesterday on the radio, and I don't usually have experiences like that. You know, I try to not offend anybody, but it was good learning for me, and I never want to offend anybody. So it's really important for us to take this time that George Floyd, not his death, not be in vain, and that we all take some time to learn from this. So are you learning? Have you learned? Are you willing to be open-minded about the learning? Are you willing to hear it? And have you had an experience, you know, kind of like my epiphany yesterday, or I guess this morning, where you were doing the wrong thing and you thought, oh my gosh, I had no idea. I had no idea that that was hurting you, that that was hurtful, because we come at it from a different lens. We just do. I've had so many people say to me that, you know, they didn't want to ask me a question about Judaism because they thought it might offend me. Now, I'm a little different because I don't get offended by that. In fact, I want to teach. I think it is my job to teach and to educate. And I love when people ask me questions about things they don't fully understand. And if it is an offensive word they use or something, I would probably say, hey, you might not want to say that in public, but here's why. And I think this is such a pivotal moment in our universe right now where that learning can happen. And I pray that it does. And it's not fun when it happens. You know, Nakima was yelling at me. It's not fun. But when I took a step back, I thought, okay, she is hurting. And I somehow offended her. So let me own that and learn from it. That is the key here. Richard's in Minneapolis. Richard, you want to jump in here on all of this? I know these are hard conversations.
Well, yes. I think I've always been tolerant of other cultures. But one thing I want to comment, what you were just saying, you're a radio host, and you want to bring out all sides. You shouldn't have to apologize because you ask a question from the other side. You could say,
thank you.
You could say, I want to play devil's advocate or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you're a radio mm-hmm. host. You shouldn't apologize for offending somebody on the radio. You
well,
know?
That's sweet, Richard. Thank you. That's
kind. You know, from a television program last night on one of the newscasts, there's about 50 people doing the damage. And I'm mad at those 50 people because the host on the television said they were going from place to place, the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They should arrest those 50 people.
Right. That's what our guest just at the top of the show said. She said she saw this group, couple of people, in a pickup. They would go, they would loot, they would steal, they would burn, and they would move on to the next thing. They weren't interested in protesting or justice or, you know, social change. They were just interested. This small, very small group was just interested in looting, and that's wrong.
Anarchy, yeah. It's nothing to do with Mr. Floyd.
I hear you. I hear you, Richard. Thank you for calling in, Richard. Thank you for being open-minded. That's what I want to foster here. I want this show to be a space where you can ask questions, you can get answers, and we don't want to hurt anybody. But hard conversations, sometimes that happens. Sometimes you step on toes, and then we learn and we get better, right? Maya Angelou, when you know better, you do better. And it's really important to learn from the death of George Floyd. It is so important. When we return, we are going to talk with Sloan Martin. Sloan has been on the scene of these protests and the danger, I think, till 3 a.m. She is back at it today. She is going to update us on what she is seeing and hearing next on News Talk 830 WCCO. Jordana here. It's 3:49. Thank you for joining me on what is a beautiful yet challenging day here in Minnesota as we grieve the loss of George Floyd. Sloan Martin was out covering the protests until 3 a.m. last night. She is back at it today at the peaceful protest at Government Center. Sloan, let's start by just setting the stage for us last night. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was, of course, it is an example of how all of us are hurting. And seeing the destruction in the third precinct was very difficult to see. And it's a theme that's continued throughout the week where, you know, how things look and the demeanor of things and the voices and the words feel so much different between day and nighttime. And we'll see how things develop throughout the day and maybe change with that curfew that was enacted here today. And also with the announcement of at least charges brought against Officer Chauvin. So we'll have to see how things play out. But what I saw last night, it was very difficult. And people who I'm talking with today, and this has been something that's echoed through a lot of protesters I've talked about, that even if they disagree with, you know, the violence and the looting and the damage that they are causing in the community and to these small businesses, they still understand the anger and where it's coming from. And I've said this all week long with you, Jordana, that this is, of course, about George Floyd and the inhumanity of that death that they see, but also just so much greater, deeper, more complicated issues of racism.
And is that being addressed? Are we talking about that? Or I know there was you're at the protest today at Government Center. I've been watching all day and listening all day to the press conference where, of course, the announcement of charges against Derek Chauvin was announced. I hear the protesters behind you. Are they pleased that the charges were announced?
Well, they're chanting right now, lock them up. And there appears to be still quite a bit of They still are, I think there is still a lot of animosity toward Mike Freeman, that they don't trust him to do what they're looking to do. So, of course, I think that they were pleased to see that when we're looking at a 4-day time change to, you know, get to those charges, as opposed to the earliest before this was 4 months that happened with Geronimo Yanez in the death of Philando Castile. So I think that there is an element of, you know, being pleased with that. But a lot of what I'm hearing is more. They want an elevated murder charge. They want charges immediately to those other officers, and definitely no friends of Mike Freeman in the community activist group.
Tell us what you're seeing now and where are you, Sloan?
I am at the County Government Center, where it has been a peaceful protest this entire day. I've been here for close to 2 hours now, and we've seen, you know, community activists and people like Leslie Redmond, who is the NAACP chair here in Minneapolis. And even if, you know, you're hearing in the background these really fiery, passionate chants, I've also seen, you know, mics off, you know, no megaphone, just having conversations about getting to this point, how we can make change. Something that struck me, what someone said, is that, you know, we are you know, a lot of children of color are dealing with situations where their teachers or their police officers don't look like them or don't even live in their community, and how that can make an impact on how they, you know, are brought through society and the system. So having these types of really deep community organizations is what I'm seeing right now. I'm still seeing the anger. I'm still seeing the fire, but very peaceful here. People holding signs, listening intently, engaging with each other. It's been a really interesting thing to observe.
I feel that. I mean, I watched the press conference today. I mean, I feel their anger at not having more of the officers charged. I understand that. I was relieved and grateful that they charged Derek Chauvin as well, as I think it was a dollar short and a day late. But I can hear them behind you. I'm glad you're saying they're being peaceful, because that is peaceful protest for me is a beautiful thing to see in the United States. They are exercising their right to civil disobedience, and that, hopefully, I pray that that's the way that we make change. Not the things you saw when the lights go out and it gets dark in Minnesota, but hopefully people will stand up and start listening.
No, I think that's exactly right. And there have been so many times this week, and now I'm looking at the protesters, they're actually, looks like they're taking a knee. I cannot hear the speakers because there's no megaphone, but I assume that's the symbolic taking a knee, like we've seen like from Colin Kaepernick, for example, fists in the air right now. So seeing this type of engagement with fellow people is, I've just seen so many moments of that, just to speak to what you're saying, Jordana, where I have felt, you know, you feel affected by it. Even as you're observing and reporting on what's happening, it is seeing, you know, humanity and seeing people who are hurting but are strong. And that has been such an important element of this week, beyond the destruction. It's not to minimize, you know, I still think so much and hurt so much for those small business owners, the workers who may be out of work right now. But seeing what I'm seeing, there are times where you have that good feeling, even in face of despair.
Thank you for sharing that, Sloan. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. You stay safe out there. Put your mask back on, and we will check back in with you later on the show.
Thanks, Jordana.
Thanks, Sloan. This is a pivotal time. You know, I was hearing the emotion. I love hearing the emotion in our reporters' voices. I know they're supposed to be neutral, but you cannot be neutral when situations like this happen. You cannot feel nothing. You cannot emote. We as talk show hosts are supposed to express our opinion. That's what we get paid for. I understand there's a difference between us and the reporters. But the fact that even she's, you know, seeing the unity, seeing the community come together. And I don't know about you guys, and I'll open the phones again. And maybe David, you can chime in. This is changing the conversation in my house. All of our conversations revolve around what's happening. How did we get here? What is going to happen next? How can we stop this? You know, my kids are young. They go to an extraordinarily diverse public school, and they say, you guys are ridiculous. You guys are ridiculous that this still goes on. We'll fix that. And you know what? It gives me hope that they can not have those implicit biases, that they can overcome this innate racism that Van Jones laid bare, that we all have. Mike Bryant from Bradshaw and Bryant will be joining us in the next hour to talk about the charges against Derek Chauvin. There was another piece of video this week that was terribly disturbing. Four young black men in a Minneapolis office were questioned if they actually worked there, and it went viral. We will talk to them on CCO next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.